Morning, everyone. Today's daf in Sukkah, daf Lamed Hey. We are starting today on Lamed Dalet Amud Beis. We're back at the Mishnah on Lamed Dalet Amud Beis. And we have a good opportunity today to try to cover some ground. We have been discussing since we started the third parak, the mitzvah of lulav. There's a mitzvah to take dalet meinim. Lulav is just simply a reference to the dalet meinim. Lulav is the main, but the obviously together with the lulav come the other gimel meinim as well. Daf Lamed Beis was the discussion of the lulav. Daf Lamed Gimel was the discussion of the hadas, and Daf Lamed Dalet was the discussion of the arava. So we've gone through three of the meinim. Obviously, what stands ahead of us is the asrog. That's starting on the Mishnah on the bottom of today's Amud. So yesterday's Amud, actually. So, but first things first. How many? How many of each? Just in terms of the organization of the Mishnah, it is a little bit strange that what the Mishnahites are going to do is it's going to take a break. Meaning, what you would have expected or suspected is that at this point in time, we should go with the asrog and then go back to discuss how many of each. But for reasons, I'm sure there's a good explanation. I don't have one right now. But for reasons that I don't know, the Mishnah now will take a break, and the Mishnah will discuss how many of each do I need. How many Esrogim, Lulavim, Hadasim, Aravos. So Rabbi Shmuel Omer, we're starting with the Mishnah on Lamed Amud Beis. Rabbi Shmuel says, Shlosha Hadasim. So you need three Hadasim, Shtei Aravos, Lulav Echad, Esrog Echad. Okay, so Rabbi Shmuel gives us the numbers. Now, these are the numbers we're most familiar with, because quite frankly, this is the halacha. The halacha falls like Rabbi Shmuel, that you need three hadasim, you need two aravos, and you need one lulav and one esrog. In terms of why those numbers, so the Gemara is going to explain. So we'll get to the Gemara, we'll discuss that in just a moment. So, afilu shnaim ketumim ve'echad eino katam. And then he says, now of the three, now there's only one of the minim that only needs three, so let's assume that we're talking about the hadasim. Rashi says that, afilu shnaim ketumim, even if two of them are clipped, ve'echad eino katam, and one of them is not clipped. Now that's a little bit difficult to understand because we learned in the previous Mishnah that clipping the top of the hadas is no good. That's a disqualification. So, okay. But if two of the three are clipped, so that would be okay. Rabbi Tarfon Omer, afilu shloshtem kitumim. And Rabbi Tarfon goes even one step further. And Rabbi Tarfon says, even if all three of them are clipped, that would be acceptable, that would be okay. And Rabbi Kiva Omer, kishem shalulav echad v'asrog echad, kach hadas echad v'arava achas. And then Rabbi Kiva says that, no, he disagrees with the numbers altogether. And he says, principally, I only need one of each. One lulav, one esrog. Well, that everyone agrees to. And just like I only need one lulav and one esrog, I too only will need one hadas and one arava. Tanya, the Gemara, we jump right into the Gemara. Rabbi Yishmael Amar priyat hadar echad. So the Torah says, and this is an explanation of Rabbi Yishmael, meaning, how does he arrive at the numbers as 1, 1, 3, and 2? So he starts off as follows. Priyat hadar echad. So the Torah says, a fruit, a beautiful fruit. So obviously that's a reference to one. Kapos tamarim echad. Kapos tamarim. We've said this already a couple of times. The word kapos is spelled, it's spelled chaser, it's without a vav, and because it's without a vav, so therefore it is only one. So kapos also is a reference to one. Anaf eitz avos shlosha. So the anaf eitz avos is a reference to three. In other words, as Rashi points out, we're going to darshan every word. So anaf is one, eitz is two, avos is three. So in other words, that's how Rabbi Shmuel arrives at the conclusion of three hadasim. And arve nachal shtayim. And arve nachal, arve is plural. We know that whenever you have plural, we assume only the smallest number of the plurality. So that's two. So that arrives at two. Vafilu, I'm sorry, period. So that gets us to the number. So it's 1, 1, 3, and 2, according to Rabbi Yishmael. Vafilu shtayim ketumim ve'echad sheino katum. And even if two of them are clipped and one of them is not clipped. Rabbi Tarfon Omer, shlosha afilu ve'afilu shloshtem ketumim. And then the Gemara just quotes the rest of the Mishnah, where, according to Rabbi Tarfon, all three of them can be clipped, all three hadasim can be clipped. Rabbi Kiva Amar, kishem shuluv echad, vesrog echad, kach hadas echad, va'arava achas. And then Rabbi Kiva says, no, one of each, that's all you need. Amar, now in the Gemara we have the word lo, so, but Amar, Rabbi Eliezer, yachol yeh esrog imahen ba'aguda achas. Rabbi Eliezer says, look, here's what I might have thought, yachol. Yachol in the Gemara always is an indication of what my havamina was, what I might have thought. I might have thought that the esrog should be together with them, ba'aguda achas, in one bundling. Meaning, as we hold all four minim, so the Torah says that you have to take them, and you have to take them in its totality. So I might have thought that you have to hold them all together. I'm sorry, echad. Amar v'chinem, amar pri eitz hadar, v'kapos tamarim. He says, yeah, but if you read the pasuk carefully, you'll see that that's not indicated in the pasuk. The Torah doesn't say priates hadar v'kapos tamarim, v'alolo nemar ela kapos tamarim. It says, the Torah says priates hadar, we'll put a pause in there, kapos tamarim, arve anaf etzavos v'arve nachal. So you see that there's no vav connecting the two. So therefore they don't have to be held together, they don't have to be held in the same hand. Wonderful. Now, but at the same time, however, even though there's no vav connector between the lulav and the other minim, between the esrog and the other minim, there's no vav connection, but they're ma'akiv zedzeh, they're needed for one another. I cannot fulfill the mitzvah of dal minim without dal minim. How do I know that? Tamar lomar ulakachtem, shetei lakichatama. So it says ulakachtem and lakachtem is a lekicha tama, a complete taking. Come back to that in just a moment. Rabbi Shmuel, manav shach. Now the Gemara says, I don't understand the position of Rabbi Shmuel. He is difficult to understand. So ishlemem bai lebai nami kula ilo bai shlemem afilo chan nami lo. So Rabbi Shmuel's position is a compromise position, and like all compromises, compromise is very hard to understand. In other words, he says that of the hadasim, two of them could be clipped, one of them cannot be clipped. Gemara says, really? In other words, I understand. If a clipped hadas is acceptable, so then all three of them can be clipped. And if a clipped hadas is not acceptable, so then none of them can be clipped. So that compromised position of Rabbi Tarfon, not Rabbi Tarfon, Rabbi Shmuel, is hard to understand. So I'm Rabbi Amichazer Bo Rabbi Yishmael. Rabbi Shmuel is Chavrati. He retracted from his position. And so therefore, originally, he said you needed three, and then Rabbi Shmuel conceded that you only need one. I'm Rabbi Yehuda, I'm Shmuel, halacha ke Rabbi Tarfon. The halacha is, in fact, like Rabbi Tarfon. V'azah Shmuel tamid amr lehu Shmuel lahanu demezavne asa ashvu v'zvine. Now, Rabbi Shmuel is consistent because Shmuel says to those who are selling the hadasim, you know what, don't price gouge. Okay, I don't know if you noticed, but perhaps you made the observation that prior to Pesach, the price of matzah seems to go up, and prior to lulav, the price of the lulav seems to go up as well. In other words, it's a simple form of supply and demand, and so Shmuel is going to try to influence the market. This is not the first time in the Gemara that we've seen Shmuel try to influence the market. He's influenced the market before. He's a Mar Dasri. He's a leader. He's a leader of the Nahardah community, and so basically he will encourage, manipulate, or whatever, however you want to say it. But in other words, he's going to influence the market. So he goes over to the people selling the hadassim, and he says to him, settle down, people. In other words, I know you're excited. I know it's Sukkot. I know you're looking to make money. Making money is fine. So, but settle down. And he goes on. The elo, and if you don't settle down and you feel like this is an excellent opportunity to make more money than you should, darshin lechu k'Rabbi Tarfon. So I'm going to tell the populace that the halacha falls like Rabbi Tarfon. Remember, Rabbi Tarfon, our Mishnah, says that you only need one. So my time. So I'm sorry. Darshin lechu k'Rabbi Tarfon. So my time. Ilam mishon demekol. So the Gemara says, okay. Now Shmuel was obviously threatening. Now again, it's interesting, we've had this discussion before, versions of this discussion before, meaning he's threatening that he's going to pronounce to the people that the halacha follows a particular Tana, even though we actually don't follow that particular Tana. So was it an empty threat? Was it a real threat? Okay, that's a discussion, that's beyond the purview of the Daf Yomi, but it's something worth, certainly something worth considering. But the Gemara says, look, as long as he's threatening, as long as he's in the world of threatening, but in other words, he could have gone one step further. Religiously, Rabbi Akiva, demekol tvei. So the Gemara said, yeah. So the Gemara says, so why not go like Rabbi Akiva? Rabbi Akiva allows. I'm sorry. Rabbi Tarfon allows the clipped hadasim. Rabbi Akiva only says you only need one hadas. Okay, I'm sorry. I apologize. I made a mistake. So Rabbi Akiva says I only need one hadas. So the Gemara says, talsa ketuma shechicha achad velo katam lo shechiach. The Gemara says no. He threatened as far as he could go. Because to get the clipped hadasim, that's easy. To get one unclipped hadas, so that's not easy. And so therefore, he threatened. No, he did a good job threatening. So that's how he settled down all the mochim, all the people who were selling the hadassim, listen, settle down, people. Otherwise, I'm going to tell everyone the halacha is like Rabbi Tarfon. They could all be clipped and it'll make that won't sit well with the mochrim. Okay, and that's how Shmuel challenged them. A couple things to talk about and before we move on to the next Mishnah. Number one, right? So from our Gemara, it sounds like a clip hadas is acceptable. Meaning Shmuel just got done saying the halacha is like Rabbi Tarfon. And Rabbi Tarfon says that a clipped hadas is acceptable. Now that's very difficult to understand because in the previous Mishnah, okay, I take it back, two Mishnahs ago, right, when we were discussing the hadas, so we said, hadas agazav ayavish pasol, shal asher vishir on the edachas pasol, niktam rosho, so in the previous Mishnah, when discussing the Hadas, the Mishnah says, Niksam Rosho, if the head of it is clipped, so it's disqualified. And now, our discussion in our Gemara makes no reference to the Mishnah back on Daf Lamed Gimel, and Lamed Beis Amed Beis, and our Mishnah simply says, Allah is like Rabbi Tarfon, who says that a clipped Hadas is fine. So it is a little bit difficult to understand, meaning it seems to be that we are, the Gemaras are arguing with one another, but usually when the Gemaras are arguing with one another, the Gemara makes a reference to that, and our Gemara made no reference to that. So it is difficult to understand, and therefore the discussion goes on in terms of whether or not a clipped hadas is good or not good. So there's much more to discuss on this topic, but I'm just raising awareness that the beginning of the discussion is how strange it is that our Mishnah says that a clipped hadas is fine, and meanwhile the Mishnah back on Daf Lamed Beis says that a clipped hadas is not acceptable. Okay, one other thing to talk about before we move on to the next Mishnah, our Gemara says that there has to be a lekichatama, meaning the word ulekachtem is really a contraction of two words. Lekachtem means that you must take. Ulekachtem, the Gemara says, lekichatama has to be complete taking. Which means that what was our Gemara's conclusion is that the dalad minim or ma'akiv zed zed. I need all four species. It is insufficient to have three out of four. Three out of four is unacceptable. I need all four species. Okay. But the Gemara also did conclude at the same time, I don't need to hold them all in one hand. It would be okay if I distributed between the two hands, which I'm sure we all kind of figured out that was going to be the conclusion, because when we take our lulav and esrog, so we're holding the lulav together with the other greens in one hand, and we're holding the esrog in our right hand, and we're holding the esrog in the left hand. So we knew the Gemara's conclusion. But it's very interesting. Tosfos over here discusses a position of the Bahag, a very interesting position of the Bahag. Do the Dalaminim have to be held at the same time? Okay, now, what would you say regarding that meaning? I know I need all four. The Gemara just concluded that. And I also know that I don't need to hold all of them in the same hand. The Gemara concluded that as well. But do they have to be picked up at the same time? So, in other words, to fulfill the mitzvah.
Well, isn't that
something
with the
Igud? Let's assume that. No, that's a good point. Let's assume we don't hold like Rev Yehuda. Mm-hmm. That ain't Tzarech Eged. So I want to fulfill the mitzvah. Do I have to hold them up at the same time? So interestingly enough, there's a machlokas amongst the Rishonim. And you could see the beginning of this machlokas in Tosfos Sheitei Lekichatama. Okay, Lekichatama, first of all, Tosfos points out, Lekichatama will be an explanation, we're going to see, it's going to bring us to the rest of today's daf. Lekichatama is also an explanation in terms of why it is that if the esrog is missing any amount, so the esrog is no good. We'll talk about that later this morning. But anyway, Mehaitama nami pasina an esrog, chasim ishim de'einze lekichatama, uviyam sheni lo chayshina nafagav dekat bina abda aminim v'tayma priyash b'shpirkin. And then Tosfos goes back to a point he made in the beginning of the perek. What about on day two? Is there a lekichatama requirement on day two? Tosfos says there isn't, because ulekachtem lachem bayom harishon. You take on the first day. So Tosfos says that this lekichatama requirement is limited to the first day, not beyond the first day. Uvakamus rabba mesik dahad demakve adad de loshana leshein lo. Aval yeshlo ein ma'akve no perish behilchas gedolos. Here we go. And then Tosfos over here quotes the halachas gedolos. Ein ma'akvin de lotema ad de magbalu bahade hadade ela I magbe kochad vechad lechude shapir dami. So he quotes Halachas Gedolos. I also said, took me for a surprise as well. He quotes Halachas Gedolos. He says, you don't have to hold all of them at the same time. It would be okay, according to the Halachas Gedolos. I pick one up, I put it down. I pick a second one up, I put it down. And I do that for all Dalaminim. And the Halachas Gedolos says, you have fulfilled your mitzvah of Lulav. D'kaimelan lulav ain't tzarech eged. Phil, he addressed your issue. He says, we are of the opinion that lulav doesn't require an eged. So now lulav doesn't require an eged. And the only thing is, I just need all four. I don't need to pick up all four at the same time. That is the opinion of the Halachas Gedolos. Tosfos says, I cannot imagine. V'davar teimahu. Tosfos says, it's very, very hard to imagine. Lamar kein de kevan de kulo mitzvah achas, heichil ilu b'zeh achar zeh. So Tosfos says, yeah, it's one mitzvah. Meaning it's four components of one mitzvah. So if it's four components of one mitzvah, so then, doesn't it make sense that you have to pick up all of them together? Tosos says, I can't imagine. So we have over here in this Tosos, a basic machlokas between the Halachos Gedolos and the Balei HaTosfos in terms of whether or not, we know you need all four. That's not the discussion. The only discussion is, do I have to pick them up all at the same time? Halachos Gedolos says no, and Tosos says yes. And then Tosos points out, Rabbeinu Tam, Higia B'Sifro, Lo Shano D'Ma'akve, Mishum Tama, Ela She'en Lo Aval Yeshlo, Tamahu Afa Pishlo, Chibra Ba'agda. Okay, anyway, he quotes Rabbeinu Tam. Yeah.
When
you're learning Menachot,
when you're learning what's
Ma'akir,
yeah.
Is that accurate? I mean, the Gemara Menachot is talking about the tzitzis,
right,
and the tchelos and the lavan are not Ma'akir Zed. Yeah, okay.
Why doesn't he say that it's not Lakita Tana?
So the halach is... Tosis is going in our Gemara. I mean, that's certainly the impetus for this whole discussion, meaning what is Lakita Tana? Yep, okay. It's an interesting machlokas, and certainly to try to defend the halachas gedolos is worthwhile. Anyway, okay, we move on. Okay, Mishnah. Okay, so now after we got done with our numbers, I told you I didn't understand the organization of the Mishnayos, meaning now we're going to go back and we're going to discuss the Esrog. Okay, maybe it's because the Esrog is held in the other hand, and that's why, but that's just guesswork on my part. I don't know. But anyway, we move on now when we're discussing the Esrog. Now, what makes the Esrog unique of the Dal Minim is that it's a fruit, meaning the other Minim are not even vegetables. Vegetables is not the right way to say it. They're leaves. Leaves, branches, but the Esrog is a fruit. Now, we know that there's a world of halacha that applies to a fruit that don't apply to the branches. I'll give you just but one example, and then we're going to see all of it in the Mishnah. Arla is a good example. Arla is a halacha where the tree, for the first 3 years after it's planted, so you cannot eat or benefit from the fruit of the tree. Meaning the tree itself, there's nothing wrong with the tree itself. The tree itself is fine. You want to cut down a branch, the tree itself is fine. There's no isser on the tree. The isser is only on the fruit of the tree. So, and that's just but one example. Once we're talking about food, in this case fruit, so obviously there's a whole series of halachas that apply to a fruit. So that's why now as we're about to start with the Mishnah regarding Esrog, you'll notice that the Mishnah regarding Esrog is much longer than the Mishnah regarding Lulav, Hadas, and Rava, because Lulav, Hadas, and Rava, there's Avodah Zarah issues, if the top of it is clipped off, but now that we're dealing with Esrog, there are Arla issues, Truma issues, Maaser Sheni issues, meaning now we get into the whole world of the agricultural law, because the Esrog is a fruit. Esrog HaGazel V'Hayavish Pasul. But we start off with what we're familiar with, and that is that if the Esrog is either stolen or it's dry, it's going to be disqualified. Shal Sher V'Shal Nidach Es Pasul. Okay, good. The Mishnayos are very systematic. The Asher and the Yer Nidachis, if I have the Esrog either coming from an Asher tree or it was coming from a subverted city, so it's going to be disqualified. Shel Arla Pasul. Now we move right into the agricultural law. So if the Esrog comes off of an Arla tree, again, Arla is the Isser in the Torah, where if I have the tree planted within the first 3 years of its planting, one is not allowed to either eat nor benefit from the fruit. Right? That's a very serious Isser. Meaning, generally speaking, when we talk about the prohibition regarding food, we say that there's an Isser Achila. When it comes to Arla, Arla's Asr Be'achila Uvehana. I can't eat it, I can't get benefit from it. So not only can I not take an olive off the vine, off the tree, I should say, in the first 3 years, but to eat it, but also I can't make oil out of it, I can't rub it into people's skins. In other words, no benefit. Asr Be'achila Uvehana. The only thing to do with it is just simply to destroy it. So, Shel Truma Temeya Pasul. Now, if the esrog was truma tamea, meaning that, again, the esrog is a fruit, which means that there's a mitzvah of trumas maestros. So let's imagine now that the farmer has harvested his esrogim, and the first 2% has to go to the Kohen. So he dedicates the first 2% to go to the Kohanim. So out of 100 esrogim, two of them now belong to the Kohen in the form of truma. Truma now has a higher susceptibility to truma. If the truma becomes tame, the Mishnah says, puzzle. Can't use it. Why not? Gemara is going to discuss. Shel truma tahora. Now let's say it didn't become tame. Tamea. Let's say the esrog is still tahora. What's its only issue? It's truma. Lo yitol v'im natal kasha. So the Mishnah says, shouldn't use it, but if you do, it's acceptable. Okay, what's the issue over there? So stay tuned. We're going to discuss that in the Gemara. Shel damai. Let's say the esrog is damai. What is damai exactly? Damai is what is it? In other words, that's what the words actually mean. Right? The Masechta in the beginning of Seder Zrayim explains what damai is. Produce purchased from a namaritz. Produce purchased from a person who is not careful about his performance of halachos, and specifically, he's not careful about separating trumas and maestros. When you purchase from an amaritz in general, let's start off with the basics. If you purchase from anybody, who is shomer mitzvos, somebody who's careful about mitzvos, you will make the assumption that he won't sell it to you without having taken off trumas and maestros. The onus, the obligation, the burden of taking off trumas and maestros is on the farmer. So generally speaking, the assumption is that when he sells it to you, he sells it to you with trumas and maestros having been taken off. Problem is, when you buy from an amaretz, he's not careful about his taking off trumas and maestros, and therefore the rabbis enacted a stringency, a chumrah, that when you buy from an amaretz, even if he tells you, I took off trumas and maestros, you still have to go off and take off trumas and maestros again. So that, now, produce purchased from an amaretz prior to the separation of trumas and maestros is called damai. Damai means we're not sure. Maybe the amaretz took off trumas and maestros, maybe he didn't. It's in a state of suffix. We're not sure. Obviously, to rectify that, you have to take off trumas and maestros again. So the im natal. I'm sorry. So shall demai. So now you have an esrog of demai, meaning you purchase the esrog from a amaretz. Beishamay posim beisol machshirin. So beisol says it's acceptable. Beishamay says it's not. What's the issue? We're going to get to that in the Gemara. Shall meister sheni biyushalayim lo yitol. Let's say the esrog is meister sheni. What does that mean? In the first, second, fourth, fifth year of the Shemitah cycle, so we know that the first 2% that you take off is truma. Truma's taken off all 6 years of the 7-year cycle. The next 10% that you take off is meister rishon given to the Levi. 10% of meister rishon is given off all 6 years of the 7-year cycle. By the way, what about the 7th year of the 7th year cycle? Nothing's taken off. That's Shemitah. Okay. Then, in years 1, 2, 4, and 5, so now we take off another 10%, and that's referred to as Meister Sheni. That's your second 10%. Meister Sheni, you don't give to anybody. You are the recipient of the Meister Sheni with one stipulation, and that is, you must eat the Meister Sheni in Yerushalayim. It's not easy, and the Torah acknowledges that, and the Torah says that if you just simply, it's too much of a schlep to go to Yerushalayim, so you can take the Kedusha of the Meister Sheni and transfer it onto money. Our Mishnah is just dealing with a very simple scenario where I have Esrog, which is Meister Sheni Esrog, meaning I didn't transfer its Kedusha onto money, but rather I brought the Esrog to Yerushalayim. Can I use the Esrog for my mitzvah of Lulav and Esrog? So the Mishnah says you shouldn't, but if you do, it's kosher. And again, when we get to the Gemara, we'll discuss what that issue actually is. Alsa chazazis, al rubo. If it develops blisters or boils on the majority of the esrog, now we're talking about physical blemishes of the esrog. So some form of blister or boil that develops over the majority of the esrog, or not la pit maso, or the pitum has been removed. Common misconception. People think that little flower on the top is a pitum. Okay, that's not accurate. The pitum is the stem right underneath the flower, meaning that flower on the very top is referred to as a shashanta, but right underneath it, that little stem connecting the fruit to that little flower on the top, that's the pitum. if the pitum breaks, or the Mishnah says taken off, or niklaf, or if the esrog is peeled, nistak, if there's a crack in the esrog, nikev vechaser kolshehu, if there is a hole in the esrog, meaning a needle was placed into the esrog, and it didn't just simply push the flesh of the esrog in different parts, but actually there's pieces missing from the esrog, then in all of these scenarios that were just described, it would be pasul. So if it develops a blister over the majority of the surface area of the esrog, or if the pitum has been removed, or if it's been peeled, or if it's been cracked, or if there's a hole in the esrog, which actually has missing esrog, in all of these scenarios, the esrog would be pasul. And then the Mishnah goes over the contrasting scenarios. If, let's say, it has a blister only in the minority of the surface area, or natal ukso, or if the ukitz has been removed on the other side of the esrog, not the top of the esrog, but what we would call the bottom of the esrog, right, where it was clipped off the tree, that's referred to as the ukitz. So if the ukitz has been removed, the esrog is still fine. Nike velo chaser kol shehu. Let's say there was a hole, but nothing's missing, meaning someone inserted a needle, but just pushed the flesh into the esrog. So then that would be okay. That would be acceptable. Kosher. Esrog hakushi pasul. So if it is, it's interesting. Rashi says over here, what does that mean? It's an esrog hakushi sheba me'eretz kush v'shachoru. Rashi seems to indicate that it both comes from Eretz Kush and also its coloration is black. Okay, is that, in other words, Rashi over here is just giving an example. Rashi actually means that it has to come from Eretz Kush. That's hard to imagine, but Rashi does say it.
If it didn't accept the color black by Hadassim, the entire warrior accepted
it. Right. It could have been deduced, but Hayarok kekarsi. What if it's a green esrog? Now, mind you, we're not talking about an esrog that is green turning yellow. Green turning yellow, we are typically very lenient. We're talking about green, meaning it's green. So, Rabbi Meir Machsher, Rabbi Yehuda Posel. So, we saw this machlokas earlier. Rabbi Yehuda says that it is disqualified. Rabbi Meir says it's okay. It's acceptable. Shir esrog hakatan, Rabbi Meir Omer kegos, Rabbi Yehuda Omer kebeitza. Small size of the esrog. So Rabbi Meir says the size of a nut. Rabbi Yehuda says the size of an egg, the volume of an egg. Uvegadol, larger size of the esrog. Kedei sheyoch hashnayim biyado, div Rabbi Yehuda, to the ability to hold two in one hand, is Rabbi Yehuda's opinion. And Rabbi Yosef Omer, afilu echa b'shtei yadav, even if you need both hands to hold one, so according to Rabbi Yosef, that would be fine. Why two in one hand? So this is something that we saw earlier in this parak as well. Two in one hand because there are going to be occasions, the Gemara says, where I'm going to need to transfer. Meaning the lulav's in the right and the esrog's in the hand. Sometimes, whatever, the esrog happens to end up in your right hand. And you're going to have to transfer. And if the esrog is too big, it's just going to be so difficult to transfer from the right to the left, from the left to the right. So Rabbi Meir says it's got to be, I'm sorry, Rabbi Yehuda says the esrog has got to be in such that I'll be able to make the transfer by holding, even if I'm holding the esrog in one hand, the lulav in the other hand. Okay, top of Lamed Hey. Okay, what just happened in the Mishnah is we went over a ton of information, but little explanation, almost no explanation. Meaning the Mishnah, bullet point after bullet point, this is good, this is no good, this is good, this is no good. This is okay, but you shouldn't use it. Meaning, so we went over just a lot of information, but we didn't get to really understand anything. We just spat it out. And so here we get to the Gemara. We're on the top of Lamed Hamad Aleph. And in the Gemara, we're going to now discuss why. Why is the Arla no good? Why is the Maestro Sheni somewhat okay? Why is Demai somewhat okay? In other words, what just happened in our Mishnah? So Tana Rabbana Priyetz Hadar Shatam Mitzvah Piryo Shaveh. So the first thing we're going to do is a question of identification. Meaning one of the things that the Mishnayos assumed that we knew is that when the Torah describes Priyetz Hadar, we are talking about the Esrog. How do we know that? How do we know that the Priyetz Hadar is a reference to the Esrog? So I mentioned this Rambam already a number of times, but it bears repeating. The Rambam says that the fruit of the Torah, the Priyetz Hadar, is known to us what it is. Meaning, even though it sounds like from our Gemara that our Gemara is going to give arguments and explanations and darshan the psukim, but the Rambam says, but we knew, and we always knew. Meaning, part of when Moshe comes down from the Torah and gets and gives us the Torah, part of the Torah Shabbat Peh is, you see when the Torah says Priyetz Hadar, that's the Asrok. It's what the Rambam refers to as Perushim HaMekubalim. They're just simply the accepted Pshatim in the Torah. Right, the example, another example the Rambam gives is Ayin Tach HaZayin. The accepted Pshat in the Torah, meaning, yes, so you can give arguments, but the accepted Pshat in the Torah is that Ayin Tach HaZayin means that if one pokes out one's eye, the reimbursement comes out not with the poking of an eye, but mamon. You pay for the monetary value of that eye. So here too, when talking about Priyetz Hadar, so the Rambam says, we know, and we've always known, since Moshe Rabbeinu, that's the Astrom. But what we're going to do over here is now give Tama Dover, meaning we're going to look at the Pasuk and we're going to see, you know, can we extract that point from the Pasuk itself? Tana Rabbanan, Priyetz Hadar, Eitzot Tamot, Eitzot Piryur Shava. HaVeyomer Zeh Astrom. So first of all, the Torah says Priyetz Hadar. It's a funny way to describe a fruit. Right, the pre-Eitz Hadar. What is the? Why invoke the idea of the tree over here? So the Gemara says, Eitz Shetam Eitzo Pir Yoshava. So it's one in which the fruit and the tree taste the same. Now I always had a hard time understanding this. Meaning, I'm now granted, by the way, that what I have not done in the course of my lifetime is I haven't taken a bite out of an esrog tree. Right, I've tried esrog. Right, usually it gets doused in sugar before it can be anything good. But I always find this to be strange. Someone suggested to me yesterday, I thought it was great, that what does that mean? It's Eitzo Upirio Shave. Because if you open up an Esrog, I recommend it after Sukkos. It's, you know, it's good to see the inside. So if you open up an Esrog, so you're going to see the Esrog has close to no pulp. Meaning, unlike a lemon. Meaning, you cut open a lemon, so there's rind, but it's a small amount of rind, and then after that, it's a lot of pulp. Okay, it's bitter, it's sour, okay, but there's a lot of pulp. When you open up the esrog, it's mostly rind. And just right in the center, in the core of the esrog, is just a little bit of pulp. So the truth of the matter is that when you're biting into an esrog, you're really, and even if you're taking a good bite out of an esrog, what you're really biting into is really rind. It's more tree-like than it's fruit-like. Right, that's the, and that could be a possible way of understanding Eitz Shetamo Pir Yoshava. Okay, so HaVeyomer Zeh Esrog Ve'eim HaPilpilin. So the Gemara says, well, maybe it's a pepper, right? The peppercorn. So Kedetanya, and the Gemara says, and why would I make such a suggestion that what the Torah wants us to take on Sukkos is just but one peppercorn? The Gemara later on will point out that's very strange. It's small, hardly noticeable. But the Gemara is going to make that point in just a moment. Okay, Tanya, but first of all, why would we even make such a suggestion? How did peppercorn become part of this discussion? So, hi, Rabbi Meir, So, the Torah in Parshas Kedoshim, describing the Isser of Arla, says, Unitatim kol eitz, and you'll plant every tree. So, when describing the Isser of Arla, obviously it's eitz ma'achal. Something which is edible. Matam alom reitz ma'achal. And why does the Torah have to spell it out if we knew it already? Eishetam eitzo pir yoshava. We're referring specifically to a tree whose fruit, right? I say fruit over here. I mean, what it yields, it, together with its tree, more or less tastes the same. Haviyomer zel pilpilin. Pilpilin is such an excellent example. Because the peppercorn that comes off of the tree, it basically tastes like the tree. So, and that means that the peppercorn also is obligated in the Isser of Arla, the prohibition of Arla. No, by the way, Eretz Yisrael is lacking nothing. Meaning, don't think I'm an Eretz Yisrael, it only produces only a limited number of fruit and produce. That's not true. Eretz Yisrael produces everything. It is lacking nothing. Okay, Hasam, so the Gemara says, so, but what did we just see? In this drush, we just saw that the peppercorn tastes like its tree. So now we understand why the Gemara is suggesting, when we're saying Priyetz Hadar, and the drush is the kind of fruit where the fruit tastes like its tree. So we know Esther qualifies, but we also know that the pepper also qualifies. So the Gemara says, Mishum Delo Afshar. So the Gemara says, yeah, but there's a logistic problem. It's just impossible. Hechanavit Nikta Ninkot Chada. What are you going to do? You're going to hold up one peppercorn in your hand? Salo Minkara Lekichasa. Who's going to notice? And Ninko Treo Talasa. Okay, so the Gemara says, fine. So take a bundle of peppercorns in one hand. So the Gemara says, Chana Marachmana Velo Shnayim. Nope. The Torah describes the pre-eight Sadar as being one. It's placed in the singular, like we pointed out in the beginning of today's shir. So therefore, no. So, lo shnayim v'shlosha, peros. Hilkach lo esher, therefore it's impossible. So again, it sounds like the simple Peshana Gemara is that the Gemara actually entertained the idea that it should be another fruit, and the Gemara rejects it, and okay. That's certainly the simple Peshana of our Gemara. Rabbi Omer al tikre hadar ella hadir. So now we're going to continue the darshan. Now we keep saying pre-eitz hadar, right? We say. The Torah says pre-eitz hadar. So what does that mean? So the simple pshat in the Torah is it's got to be a beautiful fruit. Okay? What we're going to see over here now in the next couple lines of Gemara, other ways to understand the word hadar. So hadir, the word deer is a pen, a corral. So hadir zeh yesh bo gedol v'ketan t'mim m'balei momem ha'chanami yesh bo gedol v'ketan t'mim m'balei momem. Now, when you go into corral, what are you going to see? All different types of animals. Big, small, blemished, non-blemished. When you look at an esrog tree, same. Big esrogim, small esrogim, blemished, non-blemished. So, atu, sharperos, leisbu, gedolim, ketanim, tamim, balei momim. The Gemara says, great. But is that really an adjective that just describes the esrog tree and describes no other tree? I mean, you go to any other tree and you're going to find big, small, blemished, and non-blemished. Elahachi kamar. So the Gemara says, no. You're right. What makes this drasha unique to the esrog is al shabayim ketanim adayim gedolim kayamim. No. In other words, in the esrog tree, you'll see the budding of new esrogim, and meanwhile, the old esrogim, last year's esrogim, is still there. As we already pointed out, when it comes to the esrog tree is does not drop its fruit, but the fruit stays on the esrog tree. So it's very possible on one esrog tree, I'll have old esrogim there, old meaning from the previous season, and new esrogim growing at the same time, and in that way it looks just like a pen, it looks like a corral, where I have older animals, and at the same time, the birthing of new animals. Rabbi Amar, Rabbi Abba Amar, al tikre hadar ela hadar. Now, I know you didn't hear the difference between the two, but the key over here is hadar as opposed to hadar. Hadar meaning beautiful. Hadar meaning it lives. Darvish Hadar be lana mishana lashana. Very similar point is that it lives on the tree from year to year. That's the word dar. The fruit reside on the tree. Benazayom al tikra hadar ella idur. So Benazay says no. Don't call it hadar, but rather refer to it as idur. Shekem b'lashon yavani koren lamayim idur. In Greek, how do you say water in Greek? So it's some form of idur. Now we happen to know hydra, meaning hydra is the reference to water. So the vase and the Gemara says basically encrypted in the Torah is a reference to a Greek word. Now, yes, of course, it's unusual. It's strange that the Torah, which we assume is Lashon HaKodesh, has an encryption in it for other languages. Now that's strange, but this is not the first time we're hearing this, that there are other languages encrypted into the Torah. In fact, the Torah itself acknowledges other languages. Yigar Sadusa is just but a simple example that I could think of off the top of my head, right? Which is a translation of Galade. But anyway, okay. So, fine. Ve'ezri shigadol kol mayim ha've'omer ze esrog. And what fruit can grow on any water? So that's the esrog. The esrog tree can grow on any fruit. Sorry. Can grow on any water. All right, a couple of possible explanations how it is that we know that the pre-eitz hadar mentioned in the Torah is a reference to esrog. Could be the way that it tastes. It could be that the way it grows. It could be that it's because the esrog stays on the tree from year to year. Okay, a number of drashas in terms of how we arrived at that conclusion. Let us continue. Shel asher v'shel ir nidachas pasul. Gemara is going to repeat a point that we made earlier in the Masechta. If it's off of a tree of an Asherah, or if it is irani dachas, it needs to be burnt, because it needs to be burnt. Ahomed Lasarf Kisarf Dami. Once it stands to be burnt, we view it as already burnt. It therefore has no shear. If it has no shear, we can't use it for sukkahs. We move on. Arla Pasal. Okay, the Mishnah then mentions its first agricultural point. And that is, if the Esro comes off a tree within the first 3 years of its planting, so that fruit now is Arla, and I cannot use it for the mitzvah of sukkahs. My taima. Why not? What's wrong with it? Now, so Phil asked the question. Okay, it's asabana. So I will counter by saying it's a mitzvah. Mitzvah lav lahenas nitnu. Right? The general rule is that when we're performing mitzvos, so even even though it does provide for us a benefit, but that benefit is stored la'olam haba. That benefit is going to come later on after 120 years. And the fact that we know that is not viewed as a benefit. So if it was just because it was an isra or not, that by itself would not preclude me, should not preclude me from being able to use it for the mitzvah of lulav and esrog.
No, you didn't have to buy one.
Okay, it does save. Understood.
What is supposed to be the fruit of Arla?
Destroy it.
Just don't touch it.
Destroy it. Yep, you can't eat it. You can't feed it to your animals.
Let it rot.
Just in other words, somehow eradicate it without getting benefit from it. It's like any isra or not, right? The Mishnah at the end, it's either Tamura or Krisus. Okay, if I'm right now, I'm gonna bet Tamura, but no, don't worry. But anyway, the Mishnah is over there and discuss what do you do with all these things that you can't eat and you can't benefit from. Some burned, some buried. Right? The Mishnahs over there say.
Is that what they do in Israel?
Yeah. I don't know which one it is, burning or burying. Some of them don't need to be burned. Some just buried, and that would be enough. Okay. All right, anyway. So the Arla puzzle, my taima, why? Why should it be that Arla, that Esrog of Arla is no good? So pligi ba Rabbi Chia bar Avin Rabbi Asi. So the Gemara over here brings down a machlokus between the Amoraim. Charamar lefishein ba heter achila, vecharamar lefishein ba din mamon. Okay, so the Gemara over here proposes two explanations in terms of why it is that Arla is no good. Either number one, lefishein ba din heter, lefishein ba heter achila. You can't eat it. And so what? Take a look at Rashi. Ein ba heter achila v'rachmana amar lachem. The Torah says, ulekachtem lachem. There has to be ownership. Now, what does ownership mean? Ownership means that in theory, not in theory, in practice, it's mine and I can do with it what I want. Meaning, it is the way Rashi understands it, it's a chisaron in ownership. It is a deficiency in your ownership if you have something but you can't eat it. So the fact that you can't eat it now is a deficiency in lachem. And therefore, you can fulfill the mitzvah of Esrog. That is explanation number one. Explanation number two is lefisha ein ba din mamon. It has no monetary value. Once again, let's turn to Rashi. Rashi says it has no monetary value. Sheinu shava pruta di isuri hanau ukach lav shalachem hu. It has no monetary value, and therefore, once again, it's a deficiency in lachem. So basically, the way Rashi understands it, they're both pivoting on the issue of, it's not really yours. Now, why isn't it really yours? So here the Gemara now is providing two different explanations. Either because you can't eat it, and the inability to eat is a deficiency in lachem, or because it has no monetary value, and that is a deficiency of lachem. Right? Ask anyone who has a penny stock who, you know, was hoping it would go up, and now, just the opposite, went down. And you say to them, okay, you're right, aren't you glad you own it? Own it. How can you say I own it? It's not worth anything. So here, basically, it's that kind of discussion. How can you say you own it when it's not worth anything? Here, it's literally worth nothing. It's us about now. Now, the Gemara assumes at this point in time that we have over here a real machlokus in terms of what is the definition of lachem. So the Gemara goes on to discuss. Now, at this point in time, the Gemara thinks that really these two positions are mutually exclusive for one another. And they are really at odds with one another. So Tanan. But the Gemara says, okay, but let's demonstrate that this isn't so. Because Shel Truma Tameya Pasul. Our Mishnah says one Esrog that's no good is an Esrog of Truma Tameya. Again, it's Esrog which was Hufrash LaTruma. It was with Kriyas Hashem. It was designated now as Truma. So I have a Truma to Esrog, and it becomes Tamei. Okay? Our Mishnah says you can't use it. Now, Bishlam Alaman Dharma Lefi Ishaim Ba'atar Achila Shapir. Truma Tameya. Okay, we are lacking Kohanim in our room today. No, it's not true. We have one in the back. So by Truma Tameya, so what can you do with Truma Tameya? I can't eat it. I can't do anything with it. I'm not a Kohen. But a Kohen can't eat it. But Truma Tameya, you absolutely can get benefit from Truma Tameya. Right? So if a Kohen, let's say, has olive oil that becomes Tameya, so what do you do with it? You can't eat it, but you can use it as fuel. So Truma Tameya is a perfect example of something which you can't eat, but you can absolutely get benefit from it. Once you can get benefit from it, it therefore has a monetary value. So Ela Laman Damar Lafisha Ain Badin Mamun Amayhare Misika Tachas Tavshilo. So the Gemara says, I don't understand. It can be used as fuel. Therefore it has monetary value. So why would the Mishnah say, and the Mishnah says it flatly, that Truma Tameya is Pasul. Well, why should that be? It does have monetary value. Ela. So the Gemara says, okay, what we're gonna have to do now is sharpen our understanding of the machlokus. So the Gemara says, Heter Achila, we're in agreement. We all can agree that in order for an esrog to be acceptable to fulfill the mitzvah, it has to be lachem, and a definition, the sub-definition of lachem is, you have to be able to eat it. Once you can't eat it, it doesn't qualify as lachem, and you can't fulfill your mitzvah. Good. And we all agree to that. There's no disagreement. Kibleinim bidin mamon. Then, the only thing left for debate or dispute is, what if it's edible, but it has no din mamon? Now, that's a riddle. You have to think about that. Something which is edible, but doesn't have a din mamon. It has no monetary value. Stay tuned. I'll explain what that means in just a moment. Mar Savar, I'll give you an example of that in just a moment. Mar Savar, Heter Achila Be'inan, Din Mamon Lo Be'inan. Or Mar Savar, Din Mamon, Nami Be'inan. So here, this is now what we're arguing. Is it that we all agree that if it can eat it, it's not Lachem. But what if you can eat it and it doesn't have any monetary value? That's the machlokus between the Amorayim. My Be'inayu, the Gemara says, okay, that sounds like a very analytical debate, but no practical application. The Gemara says, sure it does. The Gemara says, there is such a thing where I can eat it, but it has no monetary value. And that, an example of that would be Maaser Sheni according to Rabbi Meir. Now, if you've been in the daf long enough, you'll know, you hear this again and again. According to Rabbi Meir, when you bring your Maaser Sheni to Yerushalayim, you can eat it, but it's not yours. It's the kind of thing where the Torah allows you. It's almost as if, look, it belongs to Kadosh Baruch Hu, but you could sit down at his table, capital H, and you can eat it, but it's not yours. L'may nafkamina, practical application of this would be, let's say according to Rabbi Meir, you take your Maaser Sheni, you go over to a nice girl in Yerushalayim, listen, you're in Yerushalayim, she's in Yerushalayim, and you say, Hare HaMekudesh Esli, I'd like to be Mekadesh you with this Maaser Sheni. According to Rabbi Meir, nothing happened. No Kiddushin. It's not money. You can eat it, but it's not money. It has no monetary value. So here now, we are seeing the difference between the Amoraim, between Rabbi Avin and Rabbi Asi, where now we have something which you can eat, but it has no monetary value. Can I use such an esrog to fulfill the mitzvah of ulakachtam lachem? Lamandam alafisha ein baheter achila reish baheter achila. So according to the one who says, as long as you can eat it, it's considered yours, so vis-a-vis the mitzvah of esrog, so then good. Lamandam alafisha ein badin mamon maeser sheni mamon gavohu. And according to the one who says that it has to have monetary value, well, this does not have monetary value. So the Gemara says that's going to be the difference. So again, let's just quickly summarize. We have now Machlokas Amoraim, but the Gemara now concedes. If I can't eat it, it's not Lachem, it does not belong to you. If I can eat it, and it has no monetary value, that's the point of dispute between the Amoraim. According to one Amora, it would work because you can eat it. According to the other Amora, it should not work. Tistayim, let's just finish up this argument. Tistayim de Ravasya da'am lefishayim ba'din mamon. The Gemara says, at least, look, when presented us, we didn't know which Amora said which position. Let's assume, or let's not assume, let's conclude that Ravasi says that the that it needs that monetary value. The Amar Ravasi Yatsuk Shamay Sushen Ladivre Mimir Ein Adam Yotze Ba'idah Chavasa B'Yom Tov Ladivre Chachamim Adam Yotze Ba'idah Chavasa B'Yom Tov Tistayim. The Gemara says, well, it's very easy to figure out because we do have a statement made by Ravasi that according to Rabbi Meir, you have an Esrok Shamay Sushani in Yerushalayim. According to Rabbi Meir, I cannot fulfill my obligation of the mitzvah of Lulav and Esrok. Why? Because although I can eat it, I have no monetary value in the item, and therefore I cannot fulfill my obligation. Gufa, okay. Let's end today. I know we're behind, but let's end today with one more discussion that comes out of Tosfos. We have just spent a lengthy discussion in the Gemara discussing Arla. Arla cannot be used for the mitzvah of Lulav and Esrog, and why not? Because I can't eat it, and it has no monetary value. Okay, and do I need both? Or as we just saw, that's up for discussion. But once I can't eat it, at this point in time, everyone says he cannot use it because it's a deficiency of lachem. So, Tosfos over here wonders, second Tosfos on the Amud. Tosfos wonders, you know what's funny? The Gemara just discussed Asher Nir Nidachas. Right? In other words, the discussion of Arla comes right after the discussion of Asher Nir Nidachas. Why is Asher Nir Nidachas not going to be good for an Esrog? Because it's omid li saref, it needs to be burnt, and therefore ketut emechta chiure, and therefore its shear has been reduced. It's pulverized. It doesn't have a shear. So Tosfos wonders, by our law, why not say the same thing? Meaning by our law, we know that Arla cannot be eaten and it can't be benefited from and needs to be destroyed. So why not argue ketut emechta chiure? The im tomar, esrog shel Arla. And Hedy, this addresses your issue that you mentioned earlier. Esrog shel Arla. Now, if you want to find me in Tosfos, go to the middle of Tosfos. The Im Tomar, right? The second Tosfos, right in the middle. The Im Tomar, Esrog shel Arla, typically de mechta chiure de mitzvasa bisrefa. The best way to eradicate Arla is by burning it. So why not make the same argument? Meaning, before we get, in other words, all the Tosfos is not negating the arguments of the Gemara, but it seems to be just a basic argument. And as long as we just said it regarding Asher Nir Nidachas, why doesn't the Gemara mention anything about Ketutim Mechta Chiyure? V'yei Shlomar. Now Tosfos discusses more, but it's by the way, I was right. The Gemara in Temura. At the end of Temura. I mean, I was right. I wasn't sure. But the Gemara at the end of Temura talks about all the things that need to be discarded. The Yesh Lama dropped to the bottom of Tosfos where he suggested the answer. Devada lo ha'at sarach ela neklu ba'anach tame le'inyin arla mishum denafkamin le'inyin ma'isr sheni. So Tosfos ends off by saying, you know what? Point taken. Good point. Meaning, you're right. In other words, by arla, the Gemara could have just simply said, ketuti mechta shiure. That the reason why you can't fulfill the mitzvah is because you're not holding anything in your hand. Arla needs to be burned, and because of its future incineration, so therefore we view it as if it's not there anymore. But the Gemara knows that it's going to move from the point of Arla to the point of Maaser Sheni, and so by giving these other explanations of it's not edible, it doesn't have din mamon, so that can move us to the Maaser Sheni discussion, and because we want to understand the Maaser Sheni discussion, and Maaser Sheni, there's no destruction of Maaser Sheni. There's no ketuti mechta chiure, so therefore, it's almost as if the Gemara is setting us up for the Maaser Sheni discussion. But you're right, the Tosfos says, Anachinami, we could have given this argument for Arla as well. Okay, we'll pause over here. Tomorrow we'll really look to cover ground to make up. Okay, thank you everyone for joining us for our early sessions of DAF. The harder it is to get up earlier, the more reward we all get. Lefum Tzara.